Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Chris Hoppe from Forward Agency. He is the co-founder of Forward, and Forward Agency is a YouTube ads specialist agency. They help with paid and performance ads across YouTube and its suite of products, and they have been specializing in this forever. And we had a deep and fantastic conversation about what we believe is the overlooking of the power of YouTube by many B2B brands. We talked a lot about YouTube ads more generally as well across D2C and B2C, but we really, really dug deep on why we think it is that B2B brands are missing a trick with YouTube ads and how they can rectify that and how they can leverage this super powerful channel to help grow their B2B e-commerce business. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to B2B Commerce Corner. Commerce Corner is a sub-series of the E-commerce Edge podcast discussing all things B2B commerce through the lens of agencies, consultants, merchants, and more. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Chris Hoppe from Forward Agency. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
May, it is awesome to have you along for the ride today. We've been connected online, I think, for at least 2 years now, maybe even a little bit longer. We've been in a few groups together, agency groups, where we're sharing ideas, trying to support each other, trying to help each other through Slack and other channels. And you have gone through both, quite an interesting evolution, both as a specialist in your space, both in the way that you have built your agency, really been super successful in promoting yourself as a subject matter expert, putting out your own content. It's been a pretty incredible journey to watch till now.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been interesting. I've been working in agencies on the client side and started my own agency. So it's many different views.
You've worn a lot of different hats.
Yeah.
And look, you called it out. Exactly. Like, you've been in this space for a hell of a long time. You were senior performance marketing consultant for iProspect, and you were head of online, then a CMO. You've been a CMO, both full-time and fractional for other brands. And now you've got Forward Agency. You've been running that for over 2 years now, co-founder in the agency. And really, as I understand it, and look, we've had a few discussions, but as I understand it, you really have doubled down on YouTube. You have really started to focus on this. Performance-based YouTube ads, but instead of just managing the media part, now you manage the content and creative, you manage the strategy, you manage the insights and analytics, you basically can do it all on behalf of brands when it comes to YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's probably a neglected or overlooked channel for many. We focus on YouTube because there was a necessity. 2 years ago, when iOS updates hit, a lot of businesses were just looking for alternatives to Facebook and Meta ads. And that's when we started working on it. And I think you also mentioned it's specifically for products that need to be explained that are of higher ticket size. YouTube can be a very interesting channel. So also for B2B, it's a very interesting channel. And some say it's the best channel for B2B.
I can tell you right now that for me and my business, and I'm B2B, I'm pure B2B, and I really would like to double click on the B2B piece, because I think you're right. I think most B2B brands, whether they're selling physical products, e-commerce, whether they're selling services, whatever it might be, I think they're missing a trick when it comes to YouTube, because they feel like it's hopeless to a degree. They feel like, okay, YouTube is saturated. How are we going to get any cut through? Can we see any viewership of our videos from an organic perspective? Then when it comes to ads, it feels, oh my God, we're competing with so many other people. The ads are going to cost a fortune. And for me personally, I don't do any paid ads on YouTube. I have historically in the past, but I don't currently. And I would say that although it is hard, and it's certainly not as easy to get visibility on YouTube as other channels, the ROI off of YouTube can be astronomical. And specifically for shorts, at least in my experience so far, I'm getting anywhere from 10 to 50x the viewership on my shorts as I am on my long form videos. And by using something like Opus Clip or some other short video maker, I can automate the production of those clips. And all I've got to do is basically SEO them and upload them and put the proper links in the description, etc. But I get the sense that it's the number two search engine in the world, YouTube is, after Google. Exactly. So the reality is that they get the traffic, they get the viewership. Everybody's going there to watch everything from recreational videos to how-to videos to product review videos to everything you could imagine. They're leveraging YouTube. I stream YouTube almost every single night to my Chromecast and watch it on my big screen TV. Yeah. And the reality is that YouTube, I think, is perhaps overlooked because building a channel that can scale on YouTube is hard. It's very hard. If your primary business is not being a media channel, then you really need to either have a massive focus and investment on that channel, or you need help. You need a partner. You need an agency to give you a hand. Yeah. And especially an agency that understands the algo, understands how to optimize for the channel, and understands how to run efficient ads against that channel. Man, that is a skill set that most brands just do not have in-house. They might have a media buyer in-house. They might have a Meta specialist in-house. They might even have a Google Ads specialist in-house. But very rarely do they have a YouTube specialist in-house.
Yeah, YouTube is very different than other channels also. But there's a lot of powerful elements on YouTube. You have the possibility to still have long-form content, right? Which is different. You have 90%, 95% have sound on. You have the opportunity to really get a lot of information and value in a video, in a long-form video. You can supplement it with shorts, but you can also put a lot into videos. If you run ads, you really need to structure the ads properly. And there are differences to other channels. So I see a lot of brands that think, okay, I can just take my TV commercial or my Facebook ad or whatever, put it on YouTube, and it will work, and it will not work because it's a different platform. It works differently. You can talk about everything, how to structure the creative. One thing you mentioned is interesting because they said it's hard to scale a channel. That's really right. But as mentioned, it's the second largest search engine, and the largest search engine is Google. So basically, you have the two players combined. And the question is, like, how relevant is it, right? If you have highly relevant content, you maybe don't need to scale extraordinary and then have, you can't compare yourself with a YouTube influencer that speaks to mainstream beauty, mainstream fashion or something like this. Maybe you have really a very smaller audience, but you can have very highly targeted content. So it's not only about the masses, but also the relevancy. And the trust that you can build on YouTube, right, is enormous with all the content, and you can really show your expertise here.
And I think it's also really important to have it be part of a broader media play, full stop. I think the most successful product brands in the world, whether they are a manufacturer, a wholesaler, distributor, retailer, almost doesn't matter. The reality is they have to see themselves as a media company, at least to a degree. And the reality is whenever somebody Googles my name now, just Jason Greenwood, for example, I'm all over Google. I'm on every single channel. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Facebook. I'm on TikTok. I'm everywhere. And then, of course, I've got my own website, and I've got my own long-form videos. I've got my podcast. I've got everything, right? And I think that makes it easier for me to meet my potential customers where they are, wherever that might be. And if they've seen me or listened to me, say, for example, on the podcast, maybe they've seen me a little bit, maybe even on TikTok video, for example. Maybe they've seen me a little bit on Instagram. Maybe they've come to my website. And then maybe they've also watched some long form and maybe even some short YouTube videos, which lead to my long form videos. By that time, they've had a chance to, oftentimes, it's so funny. Yeah. When I have someone approach me and say, hey, I think you might be able to help me out with this project I'm working on. Let's tee up a call. Then they'll say, I feel like I know you, because I've seen some of your videos, I've heard some of your podcasts, I've seen you everywhere, I've seen some of your LinkedIn posts, and they go, wow, first of all, you're exactly like you are in your social content. You're the same guy. And so that automatically builds an element of trust. And then secondarily, they say, I feel like I know you. I've absorbed enough of your content that I feel like I know what you're about. And it's that almost constant exposure across multiple channels that feels where like the gold dust of trust is created.
100%. And it takes time, right? It's this demand generation. People get to know you. They start following you more and more, see more and more of your content. And at some point, it's just, I think you also got these messages, right? But clients say, I've been following you for a while, right? It's not like I've seen your video yesterday or something. It's been like, it's building up over time. So investing in the organic content is something that's very hard because you never know. You don't see the results tomorrow. You have to do it for a really long time. And at some point, you're going to harvest, but it's taking time, effort, and you need to trust the process.
And of your customer base, if we were to break it down into percentages, roughly what percentage would you say, for example, maybe a retail e-commerce business versus a B2B brand that's either selling products or services? What would be your split today of your customer base, just as a guess?
Yeah, probably 20% B2B, or at least customers that also have a significant B2B portion. Yeah, so it's interesting. And you can also take all this, no matter if it's products or services. Yeah, I would say what is very special about YouTube is that usually on meta ads, you have very short attention spans and very short time frames, TikTok even shorter. And YouTube, you really have the chance to put a whole landing page, everything that you usually would put on your website, you can put into a video, right? So if you structure it correctly, you really have a lot of potential to explain products that usually you don't understand immediately, you don't see the value immediately, and really also target customers specifically with the creative. It's interesting because the intention usually is, especially in the B2C space, you want to grab attention. Actually, the strategy that we focus on is often that you want to make the wrong customers or the people that are not your ideal customer audience, you want to actually skip the ad. So when you run skippable ads, you actually want to filter with the creative already target specific audience. And the algorithm will show your creative more to people that actually are interested in your products. So it's a bit counterintuitive because a lot of the specifically B2C content goes into just want to grab attention, be very also clickbaity. And it's actually quite the opposite to really make it work.
And what percentage, first of all, I guess my first question is, do you also help your clients with their organic YouTube strategy or strictly with their paid and performance, basically ad-based YouTube strategy? Do you both?
You can really supplement the organic strategy very well with ads. One thing that anyone who is listening can already do themselves is just enabling that you build audiences who already engage with your content and push that into Google Ads. That's something that you cannot do backwards. And if you start running your channel and building your channel, you will be very sad if you hadn't done that earlier. So I would really recommend that to doing that. And when you do that, what you can do is what you just said is people need multiple touch points. So what you can start doing without necessarily investing a lot of budget, we're speaking about like $10 a day, right? You can invest into ads that show up in the YouTube feed. So for example, people who already engaged with one piece of your content, they might not necessarily see immediately a second piece of content, but you can retarget these customers. And when they scroll through YouTube, you can show them suddenly different videos of your organic videos, right, of your channel. So the likelihood that they will subscribe and follow you more and see more of your content is much, much higher without investing necessarily now into broad advertising and increasing your top line. So this is really very simple and just helps. I always say it's like putting oil into the fire and making your organic content grow faster. So this is something how you just can hyper grow your YouTube channel, basically.
And what percentage of your clients, again, just off the top of your head, do you see not wanting to execute on an organic YouTube strategy of any kind and purely wanting to run an ad campaign on YouTube that then, for example, links out to their website or it links out to a landing page or it links out to anything other than another piece of content on YouTube, or it doesn't even cross link to a piece of organic content on YouTube. Do you see that being very common, or do you see most of your clients running both an organic strategy and a paid strategy?
Probably I'm a bit biased here because we work mostly with clients that want to grow fast. So they run ads. I would say probably half of them don't have any organic content or not really proper organic content. So they don't have any content strategy for the channel. It works, right? If you really build out the ads the right way. It's also, you can test a lot faster, and organic takes a lot of effort. But ideally, of course, you have a combination where you have organic content and you supplement that with ads.
And how much effort does it usually take from your team when you're starting to both put together the paid ad strategy, but you're also starting to think about the creative? Obviously, if these brands aren't really used to creating video content, if they're not used to creating compelling content, or at least they're not used to testing and iterating to make their content more compelling. Yeah. I'm guessing that usually requires a lot more input from your team to give them guidance and pull collateral out of their business so that you can help them create this very attractive, magnetic, ad-based content. Obviously, if you're working with a creator and they're already used to creating some good content, but they don't really know how to maximize the value of paid ads on YouTube, they might come to you, but by definition, that means you're going to have a lot more collateral to pull from and work with. And at least like even their tone of voice and their style and all those things, you're going to have access to that. But if you're working with a brand that you've never really heard of before or worked with before, and they don't really have a lot of organic content out there, I'm guessing that the onboarding process will take significantly longer because you've got to figure out what they're about. You got to figure out what tone they want to speak with into the market. You want to figure out what their UVPs are. Like it's just much more effort, right?
Depends. I think we need to do that anyway. So if any brand wants to run ads, we need to do the deep research. And that's reading reviews, seeing what people actually search for on Google. And there's a lot of ways how to get into the details. But the more you invest into the research, the better the creative will be, the better the performance will be. So this is really something where you should invest all the effort. In terms of production and the tone of voice, it's actually interesting that you mentioned it, because we've done productions for 2,000 and we've done productions for 50,000, which is basically the same script. And interestingly, the productions for 2,000 is much cheaper, performs much better, despite being much cheaper. So necessarily, the production doesn't need to be super complicated. And sometimes it's just a creator, right? It's or even a stock footage with AI voiceover. We have brands that spend several hundred thousand on such creatives, and they're still the best performing creatives, while super great detailed production didn't perform as well. So in terms of production, of course, you need to somehow be within the brand guidelines, but a lot can be achieved with very minimal effort.
That's good news to hear, because again, I'm not the expert on this. You are. And man, that's why I love to get people like you on the pod, because I can't be an expert in everything. And that's why I love to bring in subject matter experts like yourself, especially on these areas that I see as being massively untapped opportunities, because businesses are just, maybe they're intimidated, but it's almost like I see a lot of brands not wanting to list on Amazon because Amazon feels intimidating. It feels hard to get listed. It feels hard to manage your listings. It feels hard to get your products into FBA. It's just everything about it. And it feels like they're a threat. It feels like Amazon is a terrific threat to most e-commerce businesses. And so they just don't want to touch it because it feels impossible. And it feels like if you do one thing wrong, if you miss a shipment and you know you've guaranteed second day delivery and then arrives 3 days later, then you get whacked way down the list. And I feel people almost approach YouTube in the same kind of way. They're almost terrified of it to a degree. They don't want to break the rules. They don't want to get their, they don't want to have their channel banned. They don't want to have, they're just really cautious about how they engage with the YouTube as a channel. And I especially see that reticence in the B2B world. And I'm really trying to orientate this conversation mostly towards those B2B brands, mainly because I think most B2C and D2C brands better recognize the channel opportunity that YouTube represents full stop. Whereas and maybe they're not executing on it and maybe they don't have the budget for it today, but they recognize it and they realize that it's an opportunity. But from in the B2B world, especially the B2B e-commerce world, certainly not a single one of my clients has either an organic YouTube strategy nor a paid and performance YouTube strategy. And I don't know why that is. In the B2B world, they will still usually understand that their clients, even if their B2B clients exist, not just on LinkedIn, that they potentially exist on Meta, that they potentially exist on Google searches, et cetera. And so they feel like those are natural places. If they're going to do digital marketing of any kind, they use those more traditional digital marketing channels. But I feel like the YouTube opportunity is perhaps missed even more by B2B brands than it is by B2C and D2C brands. And your customer split feels like it would validate that understanding I have by working with so many B2B brands.
Interesting. I guess the biggest issue that I see is that brands try to do that. So businesses try to whatever, can be Amazon, can be YouTube, right? They try something and they don't try it properly. And for YouTube, it's definitely true. So the most common issue that I have when speaking with brands is we tried YouTube ads, it didn't work, and we gave up. And then when I ask, what did you try? How did you try it? And immediately understand what the problem is. So this is very, very often. And some brands that really trust the process and go through it, and you need to speak with someone who has experience also for Amazon. I have no idea, but it feels the same for me. It's super intimidating if I have no clue about it. And I would super be afraid to do that. So yeah, I think this is really often the issue that you don't try it the right way. And I can just really encourage everyone to look into a channel properly, no matter what it is. YouTube is definitely interesting. Interestingly, for B2B, it is the best, much better, much easier than for B2C. B2C has the issue of too low AOV. They have the issue that like it's super, super hard to make a $30 AOV profitable on YouTube ads. It's very, very easy to do that for a $1,000 product or a service that has a lifetime value of $10,000 or more. Like super, super easy to do that. There's B2C is actually much, much more difficult to get right on YouTube.
And I think not only do you make the good call out that if I win a B2B basket, then that AOV tends to be significantly larger than any B2C or D2C equivalent basket. But I think the other thing that a lot of B2B brands forget is we're not trying to win baskets. We're trying to win customers. We're trying to win accounts. Yeah. And the reality is that the statistics in the B2C and D2C world are staggeringly horrific, that something like 70 to 80% of all of your B2C customers will never return to buy off of your site a second time. So basically, that's why most B2C and D2C brands, when you hit their website, they're trying to create an engaging experience to where you're navigating and they're making suggestions, they're personalizing the experience, they're doing cross-sells, they're doing upsells, they're doing all these things. Because they need to maximize the AOV of that first order, because there's no guarantee that you're going to get a second one, right? And so you almost have to make the CAC payback in the B2C, D2C world work in the first order. And that's really difficult to do if you've got a very low average AOV. In the B2B world, because 100%. Once a customer becomes a customer and they go through the process of creating a B2B buyer's account, they go set up a trade account, they get their price list, they get their catalog that's allocated to them, et cetera, that process becomes stickiness in its own right. Because if I've got a supplier of a certain product and I can get a slightly better deal somewhere else, I'm probably not going to go there because I know I'm going to have to go through the account creation process again. It's probably going to take a week to 2 weeks to get onboarded into that brand. I'm going to get allocated up. I'm going to have to get, you know, allocated a credit limit, et cetera. And so by definition, B2B customers tend to be much more sticky. And so it would feel like the CAC payback almost doesn't come into the equation in performance marketing for B2B brands.
Yeah, you're probably not going to get an online purchase for I don't know, 6-7 figures or even 5 figures done, right? Like B2C, you just go and purchase a product for $30, easy. You would not do that for 10,000. You want to speak to someone. So of course, the funnel is different, but that also makes it much, much easier to get actually the trust and to get a conversation or whatever that funnel might be gone on YouTube,
And to me, it makes, on the odd B2B ad that I've seen on YouTube, because I watch a lot of YouTube, the odd B2B ad that I've seen on YouTube, some of them can be super engaging in that you might imagine this B2B brand as a monolith. God, I could never, it's a nameless, faceless manufacturer. It's a nameless, faceless wholesaler that you feel like I would never be able to engage with these guys. This is a global brand. I don't know, maybe it's a Caterpillar or it's some massive global brand. But it almost feels like YouTube ads can make those brands feel more human, make them feel more organic, make them feel more natural, make them feel more approachable. And even if it's just something as simple as showing a guy on a factory floor walking through one step of the manufacturing process, or maybe it's the QA testing process at the end, seeing behind the scenes, it always feels that some of those behind the scenes video ads, I'm like, wow, that's how they do that. That's freaking amazing. That is super cool. And then if that leads to a landing page with maybe a full length video and maybe a application form to sign up as a client of that brand or that manufacturer, it's actually hard for me to articulate exactly what that does to me, but it just makes the brand feel more human. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, you can back a lot into this, as mentioned, into a video, right? You can also have other clients speak, for example, just have a testimonial supercut already in the video. The good thing is that you don't have to click, right? You don't have to leave the channel. If you see the first seconds of the video, you say, okay, interesting, I want to learn more, I want to keep watching. You don't have to click and go somewhere. You can keep watching the video. And the more you watch after 2-3 minutes, if you watch a video ad for 2-3 minutes, you definitely show a very strong interest. So then when you go to the website, eventually, as you said, you can have either a longer form video or you already have kind of a funnel where you book a demo or whatever it is as the first step. So this is very, very powerful and you get a lot. You can make it very, very personal and you have a lot of opportunity to back into this video.
Love it. Love it. And I know for me, like when I first started my podcast, which is clearly a B2B podcast in the sense that I'm not targeting consumers, I'm targeting people that typically work in our industry. And when I first started out, it was audio only. And then I decided, man, the world is moving more towards video every day. And I was looking at the stats of video consumption versus audio consumption. Then when Spotify came out with their video podcast and supporting that, if you hosted with them, then what they started to do is they said, if you host with us, we'll show your video podcast, but we will also take the MP4 that you upload, we'll convert that to an MP3 for audio, and we'll distribute that to the audio-only channels on your behalf so that you only have to produce the video. So historically, I'd have to produce the video. I'd have to split out the audio into an MP3. I'd have to keep the MP4 and upload that to the video-only platforms. It was a big shag around. It was a massive process. Now, I produce just the video version of the podcast. I upload it directly to Spotify. It sends out the audio version, and I can use that same video version that I uploaded to Spotify, both upload to YouTube and to Rumble and to any other video platform. Plus, I've got the full length video to cut up into shorts for short form video platforms. So it feels like the default to video is really well and truly underway in the media world.
Yeah, long form video first, so to say. Yeah. And you can repurpose it for any other platform. The other way is very difficult if you come from short or audio only, then you're missing. But if you start long form video first, you can repurpose.
Hey team, have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening. And the other thing I've noticed about YouTube, because it automatically applies, at least for the long-form videos, I don't know if it also does it for the ads. It might. But for the long form videos, it also is creating the transcript behind the scenes. And I can use, there's some AI tools out there that can basically take the transcript from the YouTube video. And all you do is paste in the URL of the YouTube video. It will grab the transcript and then it will convert it into things like a blog article. And I'm now converting all my long form videos from YouTube into blog articles and repurposing them that way. So it feels like YouTube has built in so many video specific features into their platform that you can understand why it's become the de facto video hosting platform of the entire internet.
Yeah, that's very smart. You can link from your YouTube video to your blog article. You can implement the YouTube video in the blog article and you have cross-reference. And it's true, like, just consider yourself, right? When I have a question that is not answered directly in an article, I go on YouTube and find how-to videos. And that's pretty much the place you can learn anything on YouTube. There are people that learn all their skill sets basically through YouTube. So you don't need any paid courses for that.
That's true. And what if somebody's seriously considering, let's say specifically from the B2B world, I don't know, let's say they're a manufacturer, a distributor of a product, they're a $20 million a year business, maybe they've got 100 B2B customers today, but they want to really become dominant in their vertical, in their space. They want to become more well-known. They want to be part of the top of the consideration funnel anytime somebody is searching for their product or brand. Apart from coming and working with someone like you, which I would always advocate working with a professional, especially when you start out, it's almost like learning a sport or it's almost like learning a new instrument or whatever. Sure, you could probably go and watch some YouTube videos on how to play the guitar, but probably if you go one-on-one and you have a guitar teacher, you're probably going to learn that a little bit faster than what you would from a YouTube tutorial. And so I always advocate that people, especially when they're trying out a new channel for the first time, that they at least get some guidance from an expert at the start. And even if they ultimately decide to take that skill in-house, at least they're starting off with a good foundation instead of making an absolute self. Like you said, what we don't want is people doing it wrong from day one and it becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy that it doesn't work and then they're turned off to the channel forever, right? Let's try it with an expert first.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's see if it actually works. And then let's see if it's worthy of further internal investment beyond that. But if somebody's just considering YouTube for the first time, what are the kind of tips that you would give to someone and say, okay, this is how you can make a bit of a business case. These are the things you should prepare in advance. These are the things you need to start thinking about. Where would you advise a B2B brand to start before they've ever run their first ad?
Yeah, as you said, focus on doing it right. And we've been at the same place, right? I've worked at a D2C brand, built a whole D2C there. And we had to find another channel. We looked at YouTube and we were thinking, okay, we can now go with this course and agency, which cost us 18,000 just to get the high ticket course to find out how to do it, or we can try to replicate it from their free content and stuff. And we said, no, we're just going to save time and money. And we basically went with them and learned a lot and tried to model it. And it really saved us because otherwise we would have completely messed it up. But really get it right, the most important is really to know what you're doing, to structure the video in a way that works. So the biggest issue that I've seen, even brands that we've been working with and they try now to write their own scripts, is when I look at the scripts, I immediately see, okay, why they will not perform. So you need to really get the structure of the video right. It's probably the most key for being successful on YouTube. So really getting it right, investing a lot into the research, know how to structure the script. And that's the most important. Anything in the production doesn't really matter. If you just record a video yourself in front of showing your screen or whatever, browsing through your own website, it still works if the structure of the video is right. So this is the key element. The beautiful thing, because you mentioned it along the customer journey, right? If someone wants to own YouTube and be dominant in their space, it's a very nice expression, because what we talked about, YouTube is the second biggest search engine. So it has the data of Google and also the data of YouTube. And you can, first of all, bid on your competitors. So many don't know that, but basically you can bid on your competitors on YouTube without them knowing that. So that means that if someone searches for you, maybe have already decided in their head to go with your competitor, you can actually suddenly appear with comparison videos why you are better than your competitor, which is, I think, highly interesting specifically for B2B. You can compare the benefits, maybe what you should be careful with going with this competitor. Suddenly these videos pop up and then you can actually make someone who already considered your competitor go with you. You can also appear already earlier in the decision process, right? Because nobody searches for buy this product now. They already have a search history before where they first search about the problem and then maybe they understand, okay, this might be a solution. So then they search more about this solution to learn more about it. So you can really cover the whole process, the whole decision-making process from awareness to consideration and then purchase. And that's very, very powerful because you have the search data, which you don't have on other channels.
And how important for you and the research you're doing for a client before you ever make the first iteration of creative, how important is keyword research for you in terms of what people are already searching for in relation to your client or the vertical or category? Yeah. I know obviously when you're running Google ads, keyword research is the first place you start and almost the last place you finish. It's really important. If you're trying to capture existing demand, you have to know what that demand is and you have to know what it's for and you have to know the terminology that people are using. Is it similar with YouTube that you're putting in a tremendous amount of keyword search research on there to make sure that it's as targeted as possible? And then also the trigger words that, and also the negative keywords that you use, you want to exclude people from seeing. Is that a big part of the process, quite separate to the creative?
Honestly, I'm just going to share the secrets, how we do it and how we found it most effective with AI. Nowadays, it's super simple. So basically, you go and take your customer reviews and the reviews of your competitors, get maybe 100 or so if you can, put them into ChatGPT, let them summarize what are the biggest motivations, the biggest objections, etc. Get a list of those and try to also use the words, as you said, the terminology and the words that people use when they describe your product. You might think of your product, of your service, how you think you would describe it, but try to use the customer, the terminology and the words that the customers use. And you will immediately understand, okay, this is what customers love about my product, my service. This is what customers love about someone else's service, but these are also maybe the objections, what they don't like so much about the competitor. So you can really get this information out. You can cross-check this, right? If you have that, you can go to Google, just paste the topic there or make it phrased as a question, and then Google will show people also ask for, and then you suddenly have similar questions, which is super powerful in terms of finding more relevant and related searches. So you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to use any tools like a Google Keywords Planner or anything to really do this. This is very simple and it will help you to write better landing pages. It will help you to create organic content because it will give you ideas what you can use, what you can talk about in your videos. And you can also use that for running ads.
Love it. And how do you guys make your money? Is it based purely on the effort of creative that you have to put in, or is it based on a percentage of ad spend? Like how do you guys structure your pricing model so that, I guess, most importantly, so the customer feels like you've got a little bit of skin in the game somehow here?
Yeah, we have different models with different customers. We went away from charging percentage of ad fee because once it scales and when it works, then it becomes very expensive for the customers, which is good for us, but I really always focus on long-term. But we also give guarantees. Actually, we have a 100% money back guarantee if we don't achieve certain results, because we have so much experience in the meantime already that we know immediately when before we start working with clients if it's going to work or not. So that's also, we do an audit, and very often it also happens where we say, hey, just don't do YouTube ads at the moment, focus on something else first, and then come back. It's too early, or it doesn't work for your product. Because yeah, but if we know that it's going to work, then we are pretty sure that it's going to work.
And have you ever worked with, or have you ever considered working with creators that, for example, just want to bring, like, let's say I came to you and I said, look, I want to bring more awareness to my podcast. Look, I'm not expecting any monetary, like direct monetary result. I'm not selling a widget or anything like that, but I want to grow my listenership and I want to create ads to help drive that listenership, or at least it's more top of the funnel, which is about my podcast, and then putting it onto someone's consideration list, at least, is what I would be hoping to achieve. Is that something you would say would be ripe as an opportunity for YouTube ads? Or would you say, nah, really, it's better if you've got a physical product to sell?
No, it works. It works for content. It works for that as well. We would always focus on performance in some way or another. So if it's a upper funnel, basically in the awareness goals, we don't really believe. I don't really believe in this awareness goals. When you talk to Google experts, they will tell you, hey, we can do brand lift studies and people will say, hey, I recognize your brand 30% more than before. But the question is always like, where's the revenue or where are the followers or whatever the goal is?
So listeners, whatever.
To focus on that just because listeners, exactly. Exactly. Listeners, followers, downloads, subscribers, calls booked. So this is what we always focus on. That works if you say, okay, this is my target. But the problem with this is basically that if you don't have a monetization behind, the question, how much would you pay for a subscriber? So if you are a B2B business again, and you have a very high ticket, then you can pay $50 for a call. If it's a very qualified customer lead prospect, you probably could even pay $300 or $500. It depends on your ticket and your, in the end, how much you can convert. But for B2C business, it's very tough, right, to pay $50 for a customer even, because it's not going to be profitable. So again, if you have a monetization or if you have a high ticket where it's worth it, it's much, much easier. So subscribers, followers can work if you really say, okay, I know I can in the long term monetize it through my own consulting, for example. But yeah, you have to do the math on that.
Or it might be ads. I might be saying, look, if I can get to 1,000 or 10,000 listeners an episode, then I can sell this much advertising on the podcast and this is how much income it could bring in. And then I can re-spend that advertising money on more advertising. So it can almost become a virtuous cycle. If you earn more money off of your content, then you spend more money on your content. And I feel like that's what Mr. Beast has done. He said, look, I'm massively successful, but it also cost me $1 million to make every video. So I'm putting most of what I'm making back into making more content.
Yeah, exactly. So this is very tough. Honestly, I would probably not recommend that, to think that you can make more advertising money and this advertising money will pay for running ads. If that were true, then everyone would do it. The math, if we've done it, that doesn't work. So I think you have to have additional monetization. If you run, have a newsletter, YouTube channel, whatever, then you have to have kind of either consulting or a high ticket or low ticket digital product, anything where you can monetize. Just from ad revenue, unfortunately, not going to be profitable.
Makes sense. And how much, if you're willing to share, how much of Forward Agency's revenue originates from YouTube ads?
To be true, we haven't started with YouTube ads because, we haven't fully scaled. In that regard, I know that this is on our list for this year. So to be very transparent, but we've run it for other digital products. We've run it for basically our own businesses, just not for Forward Agency, because I think in terms of clients, we are a quite, I would say, still boutique agency. So we're not someone who wants to work with 200 clients, and we would not be able to handle that at the current step. So we've run it for others, other businesses of us, but not for the agency.
And I guess you can always turn the ads on and off. So I guess if you were super successful with your ads, then you maybe run them for a week, load yourself up on clients and turn them back off again. Yeah, what's exciting is the opportunity for you to eat your own dog food and use yourself as your own guinea pig. I feel like that's a cool opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. We've spent several six figures a month for our brands that we work with. And I think, we've seen the success, but there's definitely always more to come.
Love it. Love it. And I know you target very heavily the B2C and D2C space because that's where people understand the model the best is in the B2C, D2C world. But do you have any intention or any plan to better target the B2B physical product, B2B space? Because as you say, they're probably a little bit more tolerant of the cost structures associated with YouTube ads versus some B2C and D2C brands that are selling relatively low ticket items. Is there anything in on your radar that you're saying, nah, I actually think we should probably start targeting this B2B space more, probably because not only will our customers make more, but probably will make more at the same time, and probably with a little bit less stress and better, fatter margins, not these razor thin margins of B2C, D2C. What is your thinking going forward about attacking the B2B space?
Yeah, it's a good point. We've thought about it also too, that B2B is a very good market. I think in the B2C space, we also work with brands that are already at the larger size. So I think the margins and the, as an agency, is very good also in the B2C space if you just work with brands where it makes sense. And I would also not recommend on the B2C side to work with smaller brands. I think if we were to start running our own YouTube ads, we would definitely focus the B2B space, mostly probably coaching, consulting. This is something that we've actually done and that works really well. It's just very much the same. Everyone has their own services, but that's something that works. Everyone knows also the ads where maybe a 16-year-old wants to sell you how to make $30,000 a day and shows their Lamborghini and their villa in Thailand. But the reason why there are a lot of those ads are because these ads just work. And that's another proof why B2B is a very good audience. I think why we are mostly in B2C is because my background is more in B2C than in B2B, but I'm very open to explore more the B2B market.
I'm here to help you understand it, my brother. So listen, this has been that's my bag. So I'm always happy to share. Listen, mate, this has been a fabulous conversation, really fascinating conversation for me. Maybe I'll come to you and maybe we'll work together on, I've always done the YouTube thing organic. So maybe it's time for me to try out some paid ads on YouTube, and maybe you can use me as a B2B guinea pig. But listen, mate, what's on your radar in terms of maybe an expansion of services or over the next 12 months? What is agency land is so tough. I know because I've helped build and run agencies. It can be absolutely dog eat dog in the agency space, and margins and client services is always challenging because you're dealing with people every day. And it's just a hard, like the agency space is just a hard game to be in. But if you were to look ahead 12, 18 months, how do you envisage your agency needing to adapt or change or add new services to keep and stay relevant and up to speed with where the market is headed? Or is there anything from YouTube that's coming down the pipe that you're aware of that, hey, we're gonna be one of the early adopters of X because we think it's going to work really well for our clients? What's in the future for Forward Agency?
Yeah, good point. Very good questions. Maybe regarding the trends, because that's probably most interesting also for any listeners. What we've seen is a lot of third-party content. That means that brands are not only advertising as brands anymore, but a lot of brands also build their own media, so to say. Can be B2B, can be B2C. So basically, it is really important, exactly as you said, Jason, in the beginning, build your own media presence, right? Build your own media powerhouse however you want to call it. And a lot of them are also, brands are starting that. And the reason for that is that it's just more authentic, right? If you sell your own product and promote your own product, who is going to believe you? If you do it as a third party, as a magazine, as a publisher, that seems more authentic. And that's something that we see in YouTube. That's something we see also in paid search. And it's also something that we are actually working on and will be launching in the next weeks, our own in parallel to Forward Agency, really also a media platform. I can already say it's going to be forward thinking. So this is something where we say, okay, we're going to take content, and this is something that can coexist also to the agency. So it's something that I would definitely recommend everyone to do, to create your own publisher media powerhouse to work on content. Exactly as you said, I think there's so much opportunity here, and it's just going to get stronger in 2024. And otherwise, yeah, it's tough times for many businesses. It's been very tough, right? The funding has decreased, I think 95%, I read in Crunchbase article. A lot of B2C businesses, but I guess also B2B, had the challenge that they were not profitable anymore and there was no funding available. So there was either a lot of dilution happening. Basically, investors got very good deals, or some businesses went out of the market. And yeah, it's probably still going to be tough year this year for many businesses. For B2C with lower AOVs, it's very hard to be profitable on first purchase suddenly, because everyone talked about, hey, you can just invest and don't worry if you acquire customers at a loss, everything will be fine. And that has changed. So this is a tough market to navigate. But I also believe that's a good time, because it cleans out all the weak players and it creates again opportunities to grow for the strong ones. So just stay in the game and build a strong base.
If you can survive versus all your other contemporaries, I think that when the market starts to look back up again, you're just in the pole position. I can speak only for myself. And
yeah,
our business did 25% more, roughly 25% more business in 2023 than 2022. We had to work harder for it. We had to put out more content to, as a magnet, to get people to come and know about the services that we offered. So whilst we did more business and we were still equally profitable doing it in 2023 as 2022, the reality is that definitely we found, and I found personally, that the market was significantly noisier in 2023 than 2022, because everybody was out there trying to drum up business, beating the bushes. They were, everybody was trying so hard to win clients and stay alive that to get cut through, even especially in the media landscape in 2023, was just so difficult. The LinkedIn algorithm just hurt us so bad. Changes to that algorithm and the number of people going on to LinkedIn. So I can back up exactly what you say, is that, you know, we didn't want to just survive in 2023. We wanted to thrive. And I think we've made some progress in doing that. And I think 2024 is going to be even substantially, just going by this first part of the year, the demand and the amount of inquiries we're getting has just gone through the roof in the first part of 2024. It's crazy. I don't even know where all these people came from. But, and so I think 2024 is going to be even better than 2023. I think that the media landscape, just generally speaking, is getting, and it just feels gut, my gut feel is, it's getting more competitive. And so I would say my recommendation for anybody out there is, if you've been considering both an organic and or a paid YouTube strategy, there's, they say about trees, right? The best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago. The second best time is today. I feel like it's exactly the same thing with media, right? If you're going to do media and you're going to do it well, then sure, it would have been better if you'd have started your media brand 5 or 10 years ago, but the second best time is right now. And as you've said, the competition is so fierce in the media space that we're seeing a lot of businesses simply say, we can't afford it. It's not worth it to us. We're dropping out. We're going out of business. We're going to not compete in this space, whatever. And that's, that in itself is opening up opportunities.
That's true. That's true. And I don't remember how you called it, but there is, for example, LinkedIn as a business platform. How did you say? It's an attention-seeking love fest where everyone just wants attention, right? And it's very, very hard to, and everyone presents themselves in the best light. And many people probably felt, okay, it was a great platform for many years, but it can change in an instant. So it's always better to build on multiple platforms in terms of content. And as you mentioned, you can make content in the right way, repurpose it across platforms, and start building and harvest them in the next years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, as we come down to the end of our time together, I always like to flip the script and hand the microphone over to my guest. Let them ask me one question, any question they like. It can be personal or professional. So Chris Hoppe from Ford Agency, what is your question for me today?
I would love to hear one question I've had for a long time, is actually to turn it around and say, hey, there are a lot of B2C businesses that are not really considering B2B. When should they consider it, and what tip would you give to them?
Fantastic question. I would say that if you're either a manufacturer, a distributor, or a wholesaler, B2B is great to consider literally any time. I would say if you're just a traditional retailer and you're just selling other people's stuff, then B2B is probably not a great option for you, because they can go to the suppliers and go to the manufacturers, they get it at the same wholesale rates as you. But if you have a D2C brand that maybe also does B2C, meaning you manufacture and sell some of your own products D2C or exclusively, or you manufacture and sell certain products, but you have range extensions that you effectively are the distributor for other people's products, then I feel like those brands are prime candidates for establishing a B2B channel. Because regardless, so let's say you're a D2C brand, and let's say you're a $50 million a year D2C brand. You're manufacturing your own stuff and you're selling them to the end consumer. The reality is that no matter how much money you spend on paid media, on organic, on social, on influencers, doesn't matter how much you spend, there are certain customers that you will never, ever be able to get in front of, either because they don't buy online, and we know that between 70 and 80% of all retail spend is through physical retail. So either you're not able to get those customers because you don't have a physical retail D2C store, or there are certain markets where you just simply cannot be present because the cost is too high, or you don't know how to break into those markets, and there are entrenched retailers in those spaces that have certain catchments of customers that they can access, and maybe even loyal customers to their retail brand that you will never be able to get in front of, no matter how much time or energy you put into it. And I feel like that B2B opportunity, it achieves multiple things. One, it can help you achieve much better manufacturing or wholesale economies of scale. You're able to then, because when you're selling D2C, you can only sell 1, 2, 3 units at a time. When you're selling B2B, now you're selling cartons, pallets, and containers. That's a totally different value prop. And the reality is that scale on the B2B side tends to become much more predictable than your D2C revenues. D2C revenues can be massively variable from month to month, year to year, right? And CAC can be massively variable month to month, year to year, in situation to situation. Whereas in the B2B space, because your customers tend to be much more sticky and much more consistent in terms of their forward buying, et cetera, that becomes a much more predictable. Yes, it's typically lower margin because you're selling at wholesale pricing, but you also don't have the massively high cost of customer acquisition. So you effectively are reallocating from the D2C side of the business, you're reallocating the CAC to the lower margin of the B2B side of the business. That's effectively, you're trading one set of margin for the other, is effectively what you're doing. And so I would say for most, B2B is a fantastic option if you take it seriously. And by that is that to be able to be successful in B2B selling, it's almost a completely different skill set to B2C, D2C. If you're massively successful in the D2C space, do not think that you can immediately become successful in B2B just because you turn on a 100%. B2B website. Yes, like the whole entire business model is different. And the way that you have to engage with those customers is different. The type of data you have to have is different. The type of systems you have to have are different. And so I don't want to say it's easy. I don't want to make it sound like it's easy because that would be ridiculous. But I would say that for most manufacturing or wholesale brands, that have that opportunity to go from maybe D2C today, but adding a B2B channel with a view to say, I always tell D2C brands, if you stand up a B2B site today, it would be a reasonable expectation to get to maybe 25% of total revenue being B2B within 24 months. So I think that's a very reasonable expectation. Some brands do it faster, but that is a very reasonable expectation. If you've got even a half decent product, if you've got even a half decent range, and even if you do a half decent good job of selling B2B, you should be able to replace, or in an accretive way, make 25% of your total revenues B2B in 24 months. That's really what you should be able to do. And so I think it's a massive opportunity. I think it's just too overlooked because I think, unfortunately, B2B e-commerce doesn't get the press. D2C e-commerce gets the press. Yeah. But we have seen so many D2C brands go out of business in the last 24 months. It is insane. Even the D2C poster children of the COVID era, we look at Allbirds, they're about ready to go out of business. That's the reality. Yeah. Without more funding, they will go out of business. 100%. And they are like a D2C poster child. And so I think that the D2C hype has well and truly, the shine has come off these D2C brands. Yeah. Because money ain't free anymore. And these D2C brands grew up during free money era. So I think they're going to have to focus on B2B. That's my expectation.
Wow. Such an interesting answer. I think we need to have a follow-up conversation on that. That's super interesting to hear more about it. And I think one aspect to add to that is that it's also a flywheel effect, right? Because if you sell B2B, you're actually getting more customers that will also do word of mouth and referrals. And actually there are people behind these businesses that run around with your product and use your product. So it's super, super interesting. And as you said, a very interesting topic for D2C brands.
Love it. And if people want to get a hold of you, mate, I'll put the link to your LinkedIn profile and to your agency website in the show notes. But if people want to reach out to you, how do you like people to talk to you more?
Yeah, LinkedIn is perfect, but any channel works. I'm pretty much on any channel. So LinkedIn is perfect, but anything.
Fantastic. And do you want me to put out the what's your email address? People can email you, right?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, sure. It's Chris at Forward Agency. And otherwise LinkedIn, anything.
Love it. Love it. Chris, it's been fabulous speaking with you today. I super appreciate it. I'm glad we run in the same circles. You're a super cool guy. I know that you've got that awesome German sensibility where you're an absolute straight shooter. You wear your heart on your sleeve. And I so love that about you. So really appreciate your time today. And I wish you every success with Forward. And I can't wait to speak to you again soon. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.